Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to those here in church, and welcome to those joining us via the web, our web community. And hello to anyone who happens to listen to us at a date in the future. We begin with our opening words. This house is for the ingathering of nature and human nature. It is a house of friendship, a haven in times of trouble, an open room for the encouragement of searching. It is a house of freedom, guarding the integrity and worth of every person. It is a platform for the free voice, willing to listen to and to respect the breadth of opinions. It is a house of truth-seeking, where scientists are encouraged in their quest for knowledge, and mystics abide in a community of searchers. It is a house of art and music, adorning our celebrations with melody and poems. It is a house of prophecy, not tied to the past, but working towards the vision of a better today and tomorrow. This house is the cradle of our dreams, the workshop of our common endeavor. And now we will light our chalice. Let our community be like this flame. Let us be strong. Let us be vibrant. Let us be bright. And above all else, let this community be one of warmth and compassion. Now, this morning, just for a change, we're going to use the old hymn book. So, getting your old tatty hymn books out there, our first hymn this morning is hymn number 51, Bring O Morn Thy Music, hymn number 51. Let us pray. Let us come into a calm, clear place where we can relinquish the noisy chatters and relax from the busyness of simply being. Let us settle into this calm, clear place where the earth supports our bodies and this community supports our spirits, where we can breathe in peace and center ourselves in love. Let us welcome our calm, clear place, where our hearts are open and our thoughts can expand beyond the cobwebs of convention into the creative flow of infinity. And in this calm, clear place, we may encounter divinity that is within each one of us. Amen. I'm now going to read a translation of the prayer of Jesus, and this is done by an Aramaic scholar, and it may be closer to the words that Jesus spoke rather than the common prayer, the Our Father, that we rattle off from our childhood. O Berthori, Father, Mother of the cosmos, you create all that moves in light. Focus your light within us, making it useful as the rays of a beacon show the way. Create your reign of unity now through our fiery hearts and willing hands. Your one desire then acts with ours, as in all light, so in all forms. Grant what we need each day in bread and light, sustenance for the call of growing light. Loose the cords of mistakes binding us as we release the strands we hold of others' guilt. Don't let us enter forgetfulness and free us from unrightness. For you is born all ruling, the power and the life to do, the song that beautifies all, from age to age it renews. An alternative prayer of Jesus. Our reader this morning is Rory.
Good morning, everybody. You'd be pleased to hear a short reading, but you'd be unpleased to hear there's a long introduction. Be careful what you wish for, because this reading was based on having the newer book today, and it's a reading from that, and I've been lobbying for quite some time that we should be using the old hymn book more often. Of course, we picked today to use it. Anyway, I last read this piece, as you will all remember, of course, in 2009, at this very weekend. We were celebrating our 25th. Myself and Grania were celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary. So this weekend is our 40th wedding anniversary. It's a long time ago, and I was actually reflecting on this over the weekend. We were in London on our honeymoon, and in the hotel there were a lot of ex-American GIs who seemed like old men to us. They were probably much younger than we are now, and they were starting to assemble for the 40th anniversary of the D-Day landings. Anyway, in the intervening 40 years, we've had a lot of blessings come into our lives. But we think today, of course, of those who we loved and lost, particularly our firstborn son, Sean, and our parents. But we were blessed with the arrival then of Katie and James, and then the extensions that they've added to the family through Bruce and Steve, although the jury is out on that pair yet. And, of course, we have a grandchild about to join us very soon, but hopefully not today, Katie. And of course, this church has been very much part of our extended family circle. Weddings, baptisms, the first comings of age were held here, and Katie and James participated in them. So the church and the congregation have been very much part of our lives. And this is the piece that you were all supposed to join in with me in reading, but I'll read it myself. We lift up our hearts in thanks for the sun and the dawn, which we did not create, for the moon and the evening, which we did not make, for food which we plant but cannot grow, for friends and loved ones we have not earned and cannot buy, for this scattered company which welcomes us as we are from wherever we have come, for all our free churches that keep us human and encourage us in our quest for beauty, truth and love, for all things which come to us as gifts of being from sources beyond ourselves, gifts of life and love and friendship. We lift up our hearts in thanks this day.
You're very brave. Dads can sit in on this story as well. There's no upper age limit to children here in this church. Thank you for coming down. The adults here love to hear a story, so that's why it's handy when we have children. But this is a once upon a time story about a teacher. And the teacher was trying to explain, the class was about having respect for every person. And I don't have money today. I actually forgot to go to the ATM. So imagine I have 50 euro in my hand. You have to imagine that. And this teacher came into the class and he said, you know, every person is equal. Even the very rich are not better than the poor. The literate are not better than the illiterate. Everyone is equal. And he says, here's an idea just to think about that. So he took the 50 euro out of his pocket and he said to one of the students, would you like to have this 50 euro? So would you like to have our 50 euro? Kind of, yeah. And why would you like the 50 euro? It's a nice, crisp, new 50 euro note. Because it has value, doesn't it? You know, if you go into a shop and it might buy you some Lego or it might buy you a toy of some sort or a book or something. So it has value. And then the teacher got the 50 euro and he crumpled it up in his hand. And it was all creases then. And he said to the student, would you like the 50 euro? And he said, the student said, yes, I'd love it. You know, 50 euro, I'll take that. He says, even though it's all crumpled now, you still want it. And he says, well, yeah, because it still has value. It doesn't matter if it's a bit crumpled. I bring it into the shop and they'll give me whatever I want to buy for it. Then he got the 50 euro and he stood in it. And he had very muddy boots and the 50 euro was covered in mud and crumpled and miserable looking. And he asked the student, would you like to take the 50 euro? And do you think the student said yes or no? Yes. Why? Because it had value still and he knew it. And he says, that's a bit like people. Sometimes life, experiences, things crumple us, they wear us down, stamp on us, but they still have value. And when you meet people, you always have to look at the value behind the outward appearances. That's something we all need to remember. We'll have our second hymn. It's number 281. For my reading, I've chosen a piece. It's George Carlin explaining his views on aging. Do you realize that the only time in our lives when we like to get old is when we're kids? If you're less than 10 years old, you're so excited about aging that you think in fractions. How old are you? I'm 4 and a half. You're never 36 and a half. You're 4 and a half going on 5. That's the key. You get into your teens and, well, they can't hold you back. You jump the few numbers ahead. How old are you? I'm going to be 16. Now, you could be 13, but hey, you're going to be 16, and that's the greatest day of your life. You become 21. Even the words sound like a ceremony. You become 21, yes. And then you turn 30. Oh, what happened there? Makes you sound like milk. He turned. You have to throw him out. It's no fun now. You're just a sour dumpling. What's wrong? What's changed? You become 21. You turn 30. You're pushing 40. Hold on, put on the brakes. It's all slipping away. Before you know it, you reach 50 and your dreams are gone. But wait, you make it to 60. You didn't think you would. So you become 21, turn 30, push 40, reach 50 and make it to 60. You've built so much speed that then you hit 70. And after that, it's a day-by-day thing. You hit Wednesday. You get into your 80s, and every day is a complete cycle. You hit lunch, you turn 4:30, you reach bedtime, and it doesn't end there. In the 90s, you start going backward. I'm just 92. And then a strange thing happens. If you make it to over 100, you become a kid again. I'm 100 and a quarter. And I know that my mother-in-law was 106 and three quarters. May you make it to a healthy 100 and a half. Tips on how to stay young. Throw out those non-essential numbers, and that includes age, weight, and height. Let the doctors worry about them. That's why they're paid. Keep only cheerful friends. Grouches will draw you down. Keep learning. Learn more about the computer, crafts, gardening, whatever. Never let your brain idle. An idle brain is the devil's workshop, and the devil's name is Alzheimer's. Enjoy the simple things. Laugh often, loud and long. Laugh until you gasp for breath. The tears will happen. Endure, grieve, and move on. The only person who was with us our entire life is ourselves. Be alive while you are alive. Surround yourself with what you love, whether it's family, pets, keepsakes, music, plants, hobbies, whatever. Make your home your refuge. Cherish your health. If it's good, preserve it. If it's stable, unstable, improve it. If it's beyond that, seek help. Don't take guilt trips. Take a trip to the mall, even to the next county, to a foreign country, but not to where guilt is. Tell the people you love that you love them at every opportunity. And always remember, life is not measured by numbers of breaths we take, by the moments, but by the moments that take our breath away. George Carlin. Now we're going to have a meditation. So I'd like you just to set yourself comfortable in your seat and feel the earth beneath your feet as it supports you. Feel the love in this community that has existed through generation as it surrounds and unfolds you. Notice your breath as it flows in and out of your body. Listen to your heartbeat and listen to your heart. Take another breath and hold it. The air you hold in your body is the most precious thing in the world. Your life depends on it. And yet none of us can hold on to it for more than a moment or we would die. What is most precious to us must be released so that we may live fully. Look into your heart and find what is in there and hold it. The love you hold in your heart is the most precious thing in the world. Yet no one can hold on to it any more than your heart can hold its own blood, or else we would die from loneliness and misery. What is most precious to us must be shared, that we may love and love fully. Look into your life and see those things that are most precious to you. Look again and you will find that their value lies not in being held, but in being shared. Life, love, laughter, longing. May we share these precious gifts that they may return to us multiplied beyond measure. We now have a time of silence for personal reflection. morning's address is about scapegoating. In the early years of the Christian faith, the Jewish scriptures were incorporated into this new faith system. And this was done because at the time, historic texts were held in esteem and they were used to give legitimacy to the new religion. A mistake the Christian church went on to make was to read those Jewish texts literally and to accept the content as being historic fact. There is a difference, of course, between how Eastern and Western people approach stories. Westerners have a scientific mindset, and when we hear a story, we ask, did it happen? When did it happen? Where did it happen? Show me evidence for its happening. The Eastern approach to stories is to ask, what is the meaning of the story? What can this story tell me about my life? So when we read the Old Testament, we should ask, what does the story mean? And of course, the wonderful thing about these stories is that there's no correct interpretation. The stories are the distilled wisdom gathered over many generations from people's lived experiences. And before the discovery of writing, we know that those stories would have changed in reaction to ongoing events and conditions. And although the stories may seem outdated to us, they do have useful things to tell us if we just open our minds and listen. The Jewish book of Leviticus is not a typical Bible story. Leviticus contains the commandments God gave to the Jews that they were required to live by. To break any of these rules meant breaking the covenant between God and the Jewish people. Now, given the number of God-given rules, there are over 360 of them, and the inevitability of human nature to keep rules, of course there needed to be a way of restoring the relationship between God and his people. And chapter 16 of Leviticus sets out to tell the Jews how to obtain forgiveness for their transgressions. And this is what they were to do. Once a year, the people gathered in community. The priest purified himself. He put on sacred garments. He offered sacrifice for the forgiveness of his sins and made an offering to God. So only when the priest was purified did he address forgiveness on behalf of the people. And the ceremony obviously was held with the full authority and power of the Jewish religious rulers in the presence of the entire community. Then two male goats were selected. It was decided by lot which goat would be die as a sacrificial offering on behalf of the community. The destiny of the other goat was to be the scapegoat. Now, the dictionary says that a scapegoat is a person or a group made to take the blame for others. So the other goat was destined to take the blames for the sins of the community. The priest laid his hand on the goat's head. He metaphorically laid the sins of the community on the goat. And then the goat was brought to the wilderness and set loose. It's easy to imagine that when the goat was brought away, that afterwards the community would have celebrated. They could feast on the unused parts of the burnt offerings, and they were now happy that they were in good relationship with God. The community was free of sin. And when the community was free of sin, God would prosper the community. That's the story. And that story has me thinking. I was thinking, which goat was the luckier? Now, the goat that was made sacrifice would have been dispatched immediately, but humanely. How did the scapegoat fare? In the wilderness, did the goat die of starvation in isolation? Or did he join a herd of goats and live to be the father of many generations of goats? We don't know, we're not told. And I find it interesting that it was a goat, the least valued of all the farm animals, that was destined to suffer because of the community's sins. It wasn't a sheep or a bull. When the priest listed the community's transgression, I wondered, did the priest work from a formula or a list that he had made, or had he spent the year watching everyone for their transgression during that time? Did some members of the community cringe when they heard their transgression read aloud? Did some of them breathe a sigh of relief when theirs was missed? The story of the scapegoat is thousands of years old, at least 3,000. And we regard it as something primitive, people gathering to do that. It's not a service we would hold today in modern society. But I think we still make our scapegoats. I see echoes of scapegoating in many public modern events. Not formally done, but it happens. Irish history has many stories that we could call scapegoating. Single mothers, the children of single mothers, children whose only crime was the poverty of their parents, people who are unfortunate enough to suffer mental health issues. These were people who were sent to institutions in view of the community, but isolated from that community by high walls that the community didn't go inside and the people inside did not come out from. Their shared commonality was that they were powerless. Like the Israelites of old, the community felt that somehow the right balance had been restored to the community when some members were excluded. Because people knew those institutions were there. I know as children, my father would threaten my brothers with the reformatory in Dangan. They knew that wasn't a good place. There have been, of course, a reckoning for past mistakes. And a formula seems to have developed for the process. Survivors somehow find the strength to tell their story. And their strength gives them power. And seeing the individual and hearing their stories changes public perception. Because at one time, these things, mental illness, having children when you weren't married, they were scandals, according to the times. When they begin to tell their stories, they're no longer sinners unfit to live among the community, but people just like us. But people maybe a little bit less fortunate than us. The government will commission a report, and to assuage our communal conscience, they'll arrange a compensation package. And sometimes even the Taoiseach will offer a public apology. The Taoiseach Enda Kenny's, at the time, his dole apology to victims of clerical abuse was probably his most remembered speech. I can't think of any other speech I'd ever made. Remember that one. He reflected the public mood. He had spoken for the people. This is a danger that we create and make scapegoats of other people. Of course, one clerical abuser in a church is one far too many. However, the majority of members of the Irish clergy did keep their vows. They did live the Christian message. And now these elderly, mainly gentlemen, have become modern-day scapegoats. Most of them live in isolation. They're afraid to appear in public in clerical garb. They are our new scapegoats. More recent to when the Stardust Fire, this is a very recent example, is another example of scapegoating in a way. For 40 years, 3 years, the victims were officially labelled arsonists. In death, their memory was scapegoated because of the failure of others, the owners of that building, the fire inspectors, the security guards. And suddenly it seems that the public opens its eyes to the truth. Suddenly everybody is saying, how come they had to wait 43 years for the truth to come out? And that story is repeated at the moment in the UK, where submost postmasters became the scapegoats for failure of computer experts and senior management at the post office. And yet for more than 20 years, they were trying to highlight the stories and very few people were interested in hearing them. It was only that Lord Arbuthnot who had the, we think, the grace and the courage to do it, but he was in the minority. And one TV program changed the whole thing and suddenly everybody's eyes is open to injustice meted out to postmasters. Scapegoating, so I think, is still alive. Scapegoating happens when people are powerless and two people who are powerless. The people living in public spaces, in tents in our city, are scapegoats in waiting. I know there is a housing shortage in Ireland. There is an unprecedented number of people seeking asylum in our country. And I know that the government can't magic homes from nowhere. And I am as conflicted as everyone else when I see or dare to make myself look at those tents. And I don't have a solution to that problem. I know I have to try and see the person living in the tent, the human being, someone just like me. Some time ago, I chatted to someone who has worked all her life with homeless people for more than 40 years. This is what she told me. She says, all of my life working with the homeless, they divide into two groups. She said, when I started, there was them and us. One were country people who were homeless, the other were city people. City people felt that the country people had no right to come to Dublin to be taking stuff that was rightfully Dubliners. And the country people felt that those smart city slickers were far more in the know and got more than these poor ignorant country people. She said, now there are still two groups. Now there are Irish people and non-nationals. And they both say the same about the other. Those Irish people know the system, they get everything, and the non-nationals have no business being there taking what is theirs. This is human nature. I think we're inbuilt to scapegoat. I chatted with this woman and we talked about, should you or shouldn't you give money to someone begging in the street when there's an obvious drug problem or a drink problem? Are you just better to give it to a charity? and they will take 20% of it in administration costs, or do you give it to the person who probably will go out and buy drink or drugs with it? And she made a very excellent response. She said, "That's not something I can tell you what to do about." She said, "Whether or not you give money is your choice, but," she says, "please just don't ignore them." She said, "Try saying hello to the person, to look at them, say hello to them, and then decide whether or not you give something." We are all human beings, alive for a short time. We share the planet. But the day will come when we will leave everything behind us. Everything we, as we say, worked hard and deserved, our most treasured possessions, we leave them all behind. They're not ours. We don't own this place. Ireland is not ours with label on it. This belongs to the Irish. The other thing is, let's look out for scapegoats. Those meant to suffer for the wrongdoing of others. And make sure that we never become someone who creates scapegoats. Amen. We're now going to have our third hymn, number 9, "Dear Lord and Father of Mankind." Our notices. Fair trade tea and coffee are served downstairs in the Damer Hall. Do please join us. And the good news is that the plant sale you've all been waiting for is down there. These are bedding plants, the annual Unitarian Church plant sale. This year the money is going towards the Cork Church. There are some copies of Oscult magazine on the table outside. Please take one, and also one belonging to the other magazines, The Inquirer. There's a meeting of the Managing Committee tomorrow evening in person at 6:30 in the vestry. On Wednesday, there's the usual service of reflection, 1:05 to 1:35, available in church and online. And the book club meet on the last Wednesday of the month, that's the 28th of May, and they meet in person and via Zoom. And lastly, this evening, if you wanted to do something different, there's a concert in the church. The Black Hills State University Concert Choir are giving a recital, and there's a second choir called Rejoice Gospel Choir. They're singing in the church this evening at 7 p.m. It will last about an hour. It's free. Everyone welcome to Chumas to join. Yes, Andy? Yeah, do you want to say something?
Bridget mentioned the refugees living in tents in this city. I've been visiting some of the young men who are living in tents along the canal. They're being abused, they're being videoed, they're having their tents kicked in. They're terrified. If anybody would want, they're down where Wilton Terrace is, between Bagot Street Bridge and Leeson Street Bridge. If anybody had 5 or 10 minutes just to go down there sometime this afternoon and just see, do they need anything, or just say, hello and you're very welcome in Ireland, I know they'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Our final hymn this morning is hymn number 38, "God is Love, by Him Upholden, Hang Thy Glorious Orbs of Light." Hymn number 38. The joys of summer are found in nature, in sunlight on fresh green leaves, in morning bird song, or the sight of a bird taking a bath. They're found in the colours of flowers the laughter of children, barbecue parties and pink sunsets. May the joys of summer be with us, even when it rains and the wind blows. Amen.